Mention the word albatross, and the first thing that comes to the mind of many folks is the image of an albatross hung around its neck, and bad luck. Well, that's not the bird's fault. Most of us have long forgotten the message of Samuel Coleridge's epic poem, "It's Bad Luck to Mess with an Albatross," or Tross, as our guest likes to call them in her wonderful new book, Holy Moly, Albatross and Other Ancestors. Hob Osterlund has good reason to feel deep kinship with these remarkable birds, and she joins us by phone. Aloha, Hob. So it started a long time ago with you, and somehow, six generations ago, it wove into a dream that took you to 1979. Could you give us an update on that?
Well, I'll make it a short story. I had a dream in 1979 when I was living on the mainland, and a visit of an ancestor named Martha Warren Beckwith, who is the author of Hawaiian mythology. And I woke up in the morning thinking it was just bad homemade wine, and left it as it was. And then, but I began to feel summoned, and so moved to Hawaii, back to the home of many generations of my family in 1979. And in that year, I happened upon a few of the returning albatross here on Kauai.
Mm-hmm. That was the one Makani, I believe?
That's the one I named Makani for the wind, yeah.
And she essentially was the first albatross to return to one of the major islands that you know of.
Well, there were several that were returning, but she was the first one to actually be successful in fledging a chick from here. It may not have happened for 1,000 years or more. They're native, of course, to Hawaii, but when people arrived with our appetites and predators, they basically disappeared from nesting on the main islands.
And for those who are really curious, as we all are, about how the albatross relates to your life story. How was this kinship woven so tightly?
Well, those kinds of things are hard to find words for, I think, but when I spotted those albatross here on Kauai, I felt something profound. I felt a profound connection. Of course, they're big, beautiful birds and mesmerizing anyway, but there was something beyond that that sort of hovered in the background of my mind and heart for a long time. But I didn't get much of a chance to see them again after that, and it wasn't until about 12 years ago when I was introduced to someone who had albatross habitat here on Kauai who offered for me to come visit, and then ultimately I started monitoring the birds in a more citizen science kind of way. And the more I watch them, the more impressed I am with who they are, how they live in the world, but also I consider them now my amokua, my ancestors in animal form, and that it's my responsibility to serve them.
If you wouldn't mind, I'd like to go into a little bit of how this kinship came. You had the childhood misfortune of your mother passing away when you were very young, getting into nursing and palliative care, and somehow the albatrosses wove in what would be almost a sense of forgiveness.
Yeah, thank you for such a great question. Yes, my mother died of breast cancer when I was 10, and because of the age I was, I thought it was my fault. Very common for children of that age to have no other structure for it. No one accused me of that, of course, but that's what I felt. And so I made a promise to her that I would bring her back to life, and that became sort of my personal puppeteer for decades, looking for ways to unconsciously and consciously try to have her be present in my life again. So the day it happened, actually, when I started having a real realization around the albatross of the freedom they might offer, was one day I was sort of hiding in the trees taking some pictures of some birds courting, and I was so mesmerized by them that I didn't notice an animal coming up behind me. That animal, I sort of jerked around as you do, you know, through your peripheral vision when you notice something's right there. And I needn't have been alarmed. It was an albatross hiking up the hill, going to the courtship boogie on the bluff. But on the way past, she stepped on my foot and then continued on, making no eye contact with me or any acknowledgement that I was present. And how I say it in my book is that I've never gotten higher praise. If you're as useless as a stump to a wild animal, that means that they're not frightened of you or register you as something that even needs to be acknowledged. In that moment, I felt a great liberation that I couldn't put words to.
Almost.
Go ahead, sorry.
I'm just thinking the lifting of the weight of childhood somehow.
Yeah, that's a good way of saying it. The albatross, as the misnomer of an albatross being a weight, and the opposite, as you already described. But yeah, that burden that I'd hung around my own neck, that I was guilty of basically murdering my mother, got temporarily lifted that moment, and I began to feel like maybe I didn't have such shame after all.
So the reprieve became forgiveness, became liberation.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. And you also begin to recognize it around wild animals in general, I'm sure, but in albatross in particular, because they don't know us as enemies, they just live their lives. While if you're standing back and watching them, they're living their lives. And one thing you know for sure about them is that they're being perfectly themselves, as really all animals are.
I can relate to this in one way. I had a similar experience on Kauai. A nene walked over my shoe. And so I think to some small degree I know what you're speaking of.
Well, good. Yeah, exactly. It's high praise, really, for a wild animal to ignore you, because, you know, most of them fight or flight or play dead or, you know, find us to be terrifying. And to not have a wild animal find you terrifying is comforting.
You also got to spend time on the island, which is Pihemanu, as the ancient Hawaiians called Midway.
That's right. Yeah.
That you describe, I mean, the ancient Hawaiian name, just the din of birds. What was it like to be under that much albatross and other birds?
Oh, you know what? I adored it. I couldn't get enough of it. They are in conversation all day and all night, and I heard all kinds of different sounds and what they were expressing. I was drunk on it, actually. I could have listened to it for a lot longer when I needed to leave from doing the albatross count there as a volunteer. It was a grief to me to have to leave. They were so extraordinary. I just wanted to hear that choir more.
Well, I believe you will go on hearing the choirs of the birds for a long time, and I want to thank you so much for bringing more insight to albatrosses with us today, Hub.
Thank you so much.
Hub Osterlund's an award-winning writer, photographer living on Kauai. She's the author of Holy Moly, Albatross and Other Ancestors, and the founder of the Kauai Albatross Network. Her work has appeared in the New York Times, National Geographic Explorer, and Hanaho, to name a few. She's a sixth-generation Hawaii resident and a former long-term palliative care nurse at the Queens Medical Center. See our Facebook page, Hawaii Conversation.